You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the second hour of tonight's live broadcast of TPC. James Edwards and Keith Alexander with you this Saturday evening, February the 20th, and we have back with us now our good friend and a very old friend. Not that he's so old, but he's just been a friend of ours for so long.
Let's say long-time friend.
There you go. Long-time friend. Thank you, Keith. Brad Griffin, the founder and editor-in-chief of Occidental Dissent. It's a daily read of ours. It should be of yours as well, OccidentalDissent.com. And Brad, I've so often called you the scribe of whatever it is we are, alt-right, dissident right, populist right, whatever we're calling ourselves these days or whatever they're calling us, you're the guy who documents it all for us there at Occidental Dissent. How are you tonight?
Good. I'm just calling myself a populist for right now.
Well, where else would you go for audios of George Lincoln Rockwell, Theodore Bilbo, Huey Long, but to Occidental Dissent?
I'll tell you what, Brad
has this great intellectual curiosity, and I applaud him for it. He
is a historian. He is the closest we've come to a true historian in our ranks. And yes, indeed, as you mentioned, Huey Long has had a great resurgence in recent months over there at OD.
Yeah.
Brad, it's great to have you back with us tonight. And so we've got a lot to cover. You are our featured guest of the evening, so let's get right down to it. We have you for the full hour. A post-election poll that I learned about from your website of Republican voters, Trump voters, 75 million, it's half the electorate, from an establishment polling company. And the findings of this poll proves that, if anything, events of the past 4 years have further radicalized whites and prompted them to come to terms with racial realities. Now, keep in mind, again, I have to repeat this for the point of emphasis, that this is a poll. These poll numbers represent 75 million voters, half the electorate, the majority of white voters, in fact. And these are numbers that we can win with if only they could be properly organized and properly led. And, Brad, I'm just going to read through just very quickly and then let you dive into this and give us your take. 92% of Trump voters, again, that's 75 million people, half the electorate, see the mainstream media as being identical with the Democratic Party. 92% believe that Antifa rank as a high or severe threat. 89% of Trump voters see Christianity as being under attack and essential to American greatness. But this is where it gets really interesting. 87% of Trump voters, that's 75 million people, are concerned about anti-white discrimination. 80% reject white privilege theory. 68% reject the conspiracy theory of systemic racism. And 64% of 75 million voters, Brad, believe that their race or ethnicity is extremely important, very important, or somewhat important to their identity. This is ground-shifting, groundbreaking. We'll take it, Brad, and then we'll toss it to Keith next. But, Brad, I mean, these are findings that actually cement what I have said on the air. This is our 16th year on the air. It'll be 17 in October. I have said, fundamentally, I believe, without any evidence, I believe just in my heart and from seeing people and talking to people, that people, white people, fundamentally agree with us on the issues. Now we have a poll to back it up. Take it, Brad.
Oh, yeah, this has been a gargantuan shift in the polls since Trump lost. And there was a live stream of the event. It was at the American Enterprise Institute. They had put out this poll to survey the landscape of where the GOP was after Trump. Cause you know, they thought the expectation was that Trump was a disaster. We had the Capitol siege. He's gone now. We're going back to the way things used to be. Right. Far from that. So, like I said, the poll finds 64% of Trump voters have developed an explicit sense of racial identity. And even more than that, an explicit sense of Christian identity. And this is a gargantuan change from what I've seen. Now, if you go back to put this in perspective, let's go back to 2017. In 2017, right after the alt-right had blown up, and there was a lot of, you know, social science research that was done on the alt-right. And there was some polls, and even the polls back then, they found that there was one group. It was the group they measured traits by, I think, white identity, white solidarity, and white feelings of discrimination. And it was big even back then. They were detecting like levels of like a third of each, right? And if you look at it all combined, like what percent of whites said that they had a explicit sense of white identity, feeling of white discrimination and white solidarity, it was something like 5-6%, right? But there was just much larger. The thing is, the reality was, and then there was also polls that would come out saying something like 10% of the population supported the alt-right. That's not an insignificant number of people, because the Republican Party as a whole is like, what, 40, was like 46%? That's a huge chunk right there, right? So it's not a small thing. So if back in 2017, our thinking was that there was us, and then there's this vastly larger group that was, you know, feeling a weak sense of white identity. Well, then of course 2020 happened, and you had Antifa and Black Lives Matter, and especially the definition of racism was changed, and wokeness went out of control, and racism came to mean every white person in the country is guilty of complicity in what's called systemic racism now. And then of course with Trump losing, you know, this was bound to have an effect. I mean we saw what happened with Obama, that when Obama won the 2008 election, it stirred things up and moved things in a positive direction. Echo in here. But this Joe Biden winning like this has just had a massive effect.
Brad, this is Keith. Let me just say this. I think it used to be 5-6% because people had no source of that type of information or that slant on the events of the day. Mm-hmm. Your website, our radio program, and a few others were the only ones that were arguing back then that we need identity politics for white people. If we do the so-called polite and decent white thing and ignore our own interests, mm-hmm. we will continue to bring a knife to a gunfight. And I think that the events of 2020 with the Black Lives Matter takeovers, Antifa's obvious, over-the-top violence has brought that out. Now, they're still not getting it from any of the usual suspects or the normal sources. Mark Levin is not saying this. Ben Shapiro isn't saying this. Sean Hannity isn't saying this. They're getting it from somewhere. They're getting it from us. Us, yeah. We and you.
Well, we'll be right back, and Brad continues to do the Lord's work there at OD. He's making a lot of appearances on different platforms. Longtime friend of mine, there you say, Keith. Long time, not old. We're not that old.
Not long in the tooth.
But we'll be back with Brad, OccidentalDescent.com. Stay tuned.
Getting the kids to school, cleaning the house, doing the laundry. It seems that the work routine as a stay-at-home mom is never ending. And even though I'm the prime grocery shopper in our family of four, I simply don't have time to scrutinize all the labels on the countless food products I buy. Oh, sure, I've noticed all the latest certification seals. Organic, non-GMO, gluten-free. It definitely seems to be the latest craze. But it was only recently that kosher certification seals caught my attention. You see, my husband had me download an app called Kosher-tify, and it shed light on a century-old certification industry that slipped under the radar screen from the majority of our public. I also noticed a question mark at the end of the app name, and that makes great sense, as there's far more questions regarding this industry than answers. In fact, the developers refer to this as the kosher question. Sure, I'm a busy mom and didn't pay attention to our food culture, but now I have transparency, a convenient grocery list feature, and the ability to eat in favor of my family's best interests, and you can discover it too at thekosherquestion.com.
I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. As a teenager, I gave my first public speech in my church. My hand shook, my heart pounded. I thought to myself, I can't do this, but somehow I did, and because I wanted to talk about things that were important, I persisted. I chided my church as a senior in high school for not seeming to care about the not yet born, for looking the other way, and for not taking a stand on life.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
Well, we're back with the founder and editor-in-chief of OccidentalDescent.com, Brad Griffin. And I, as I said before, not only am I a daily reader of OD, I'm there now, even live on the air. And I truly do have the website pulled up even now as I speak.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Very encouraging poll results that Brad brought to our attention, and it is groundbreaking and earth-shifting in many ways. We're going to continue to talk about that for the remainder of the hour, but I want to read directly from a series of articles that Brad has published about this. I'll read his words to you and then have him respond. Brad writes, "White populism is very much alive inside the post-Trump GOP. Senator Ben Sasse is getting censured by the Nebraska GOP. Liz Cheney nearly got drummed out of the GOP after voting for impeachment. Trump has decisively won the Republican Civil War. Donald Trump has transformed the GOP on trade and immigration. The consensus within the GOP among Trump voters is build the wall and deport them. So how should we interpret this data? The mainstream media narrative has always been that fringe groups and hate groups and the far right are this tiny group of people. Now, we know that's not true because the polling all the way back in 2017 showed that millions of people identified with the, at the time, alt-right. It was not an extremist movement, and it represented a large swath of the American electorate. But there was also a much larger alt-right adjacent group forming at this time. It was anywhere between one-fourth to one-third of the white population of the entire United States. One-third of Republicans were reporting strong feelings of white identity and discrimination. What do you do when you indiscriminately use a bazooka to smash a flea? In my view, Brad writes, the explosion of wokeness, censorship, and violence from the left under the Donald Trump years and the hyperbolic attacks against whites has backfired and created this siege mentality among Trump voters. Remember again, folks, that's 75 million plus people, half the American electorate. It has raised the salience of white racial identity among Republican voters in general because they are being attacked nonstop by the media all whites are being targeted as racists and white supremacists now, and that appears to have tremendously had a positive effect on boosting white identity. And, Brad, that goes back to the poll results we've been citing tonight. Take it away, my friend.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I kind of like laid it out all there. You know, there's been all this talk from the Biden administration of launching a. I mean, they haven't even got around to the what they were planning, the domestic war on terror, or saying there was an insurgency out there in Trump country, and there was all this crazy talk. And I mean, even while they were floating out this narrative as a trial balloon, there were people saying, We didn't have much success overseas. You know, when we went over there and we would, drop a, gargantuan bomb on the whole village and kill everyone there to kill one terrorist who just, radicalized the whole community. And so a lot of people like who had experience in that, we weren't successful overseas in, fighting Islamic terrorism and, treating like, say, 10-25% of the country as domestic terrorists could backfire. Well, I mean, they ain't even got around to that, and it's already clear from all the polls coming out. It has already backfired before they even got started with that. Well,
Brad, what I was going to say, this is Keith. They would drop that bomb on the village where you and I and James live if they could. There are people in the Biden administration that have that type of virulent hatred of us. Mm-hmm. And again, even though people are now aware of white identity politics and the need for it, and the fact that we are a persecuted minority within our own nation now.
Yeah.
You're not hearing Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, mm-hmm. Sean Hannity, any of these people.
Or even Rush Limbaugh to his dying day.
Right.
As we talk in the first hour.
Right.
Yeah, that's the...
Basically... See, none of this is coming out through the normal channels, the validated with good housekeeping seal of approval of spokespeople for conservatism. It's coming through you and us and some other people like us. And I was saying in the first hour that we basically have this situation now. We are at a watershed moment with the defeat of Trump and the death of Limbaugh. Who is going to take up the mantle? Well, it's got to be somebody that is willing to touch the two taboo third rails, race and Jewish power and influence. And if somebody won't touch those, then as far as I'm concerned, they're invalidated themselves from serious consideration for leading the movement from this point on.
Well, you hit it right there. That's a big story. You don't see this in the Ben Shapiro's, the Mark Levin's, the Rush Limbaugh. Now, everybody. Now, if we're all talking about this, everyone is fully aware of what's going on, and it's even people are reading my website, and I'm starting to see people reacting to it in the media, and people are looking at these polls, and or at least on the opposition are, starting to notice the same things we are. I mean, just how much support is there in the Republican Party for Ben Shapiro, conservatism? I mean, if you look at that same poll, I mean, the poll asked, "Is your racial identity not important to you?" And what was it? I don't remember the exact number. It was like, 17%. So it's like something like 40% said it was like very or extremely important. Something like 17% or something like that said, "Oh, it wasn't important at all." But you see this split within the Republican Party where, people, it's in the polls say that, people overwhelmingly agree with us, not people like Ben Sasse or Liz Cheney. I mean, that's why you're seeing this huge revolt, revolt going against them. These people, Con Inc. has dwindled. Like, and this is another story I've laid out in detail on my website. All the voters that support Con Inc. Are either one, like just generation people getting old, dying off, or number two, like they're going over to the Democrats. So, like, if you turn on MSNBC now, I'm sure you've seen it. I mean, half the people on MSNBC used to be like neocons or Republicans. You have Joe Scarborough on there. You have Jeff Flake and Rick Wilson and Nicole Wallace and, Charlie Sykes, David French. The list goes on and on.
Well, they aren't big in number, Brad. you know, yeah. But in terms of dollars, they're very big, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we live in a dollar democracy. It's not how many people do you have, how many votes do you have, it's how many dollars do you have. Now, they are a minuscule movement, neoconservatism is, in terms of numbers. Mm-hmm. You don't find a lot of neoconservative truck drivers out there, for example. No. But on the other hand, they have all the money and we have none.
Right.
And basically, I think we're going to have to primary everybody that we can make a case against in the Republican Party. And our message to the voters needs to be, if you see a television ad or a lot of radio spots for any of these Republican candidates, that is your warning. That is your marker to look for. That's the person you don't want to vote for, because, you know, I don't see us suddenly discovering a pot of gold. Nobody's catching a leprechaun and going to give us a pot of gold here. So we've got to deal with the reality that we have. But our ideas are solid gold. And I think our ideas, there are plenty of truck drivers in Alabama and elsewhere in America that believe the message that you and we express. And we've got to get that going. We got to turn that into a political movement
and
take over Republican seats in Congress.
Okay. Brad, hold on right there, my friend. We're coming up on another break, but this is something that we're certainly going to cover over the last couple of segments, and that is the realignment that appears to be taking place in the GOP with people like Liz Cheney being on the back burner and people like Marjorie Taylor Greene being trumpeted. Well, we'll get Brad's take on this potential realignment and the resorting of it all. The resorting of the American electorate. Wow. Interesting conversation. Stay tuned.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
President Biden has approved a federal disaster declaration for the state of Texas, getting some much-needed help to that state as it recovers from one of the worst winter storms to hit it in years. According to a statement from the White House, the declaration will provide assistance to individuals who sustained losses due to disasters and offers to help repair public facilities and infrastructure. Texas Governor Greg Abbott thanked the president for the declaration, calling it a good first step. In a release, the governor said that the president's order only provides assistance for 77 of the state's 254 counties. And the Justice Department says a 95-year-old Tennessee man has been deported to Germany to face charges for his role in the Holocaust. In a statement, the department said Friedrich Karl Berger was ordered out of the country after a February 2020 trial where he allegedly admitted to guarding prisoners at the Noongami concentration camp in Germany in 1945. Berger becomes the 70th Nazi removed from the United States, having been deported earlier this weekend. This is USA Radio News.
When thinking about life insurance, my accident reinforced you never know what tomorrow might bring. That's why I reached out to AccuQuote. AccuQuote helps people find a life insurance policy that meets their needs. Since 1986, they've helped millions of folks save up to 60% on their life insurance by comparing the rates and features of dozens of top-rated life insurance products. A healthy 50-year-old non-smoker can buy $500,000 of 10-year level term for less than $45 a month. A 60-year-old under $120 a month. Longer or permanent terms are available. Even if you already own life insurance, you really need to check out my friends at AccuQuote. Don't worry about health issues. Remember, they help me. As a pastor, I'm concerned about your soul and helping you to make sure your family is taken care of. Life insurance is more affordable now than ever, so don't make them wish you'd made that call. 877-437-4781. Call now, 877-437-4781. 877-437-4781.
Rates, policy, forms, and availability vary by state. The United States has begun admitting some asylum seekers after the Biden administration ended a Trump-era policy that kept migrants seeking asylum outside of the country until their case could be heard. Douglas Nichols is the mayor of Yuma, Arizona, and he tells Fox News that local officials from cities on the border were not notified of that change of policy and should have been included in the process.
There needs to be some common sense to this. If you're going to change the dynamic of a community, you really need to have that community engaged. For instance, a community of our size, we're roughly 200,000 people. We don't have a network of NGOs or nonprofits set up that could really address this situation. So that is common for most small communities along the border. So there should be a prohibition of releasing in smaller communities. the releases should be happening in communities that have some sort of nonprofit set up to address those humanitarian concerns that are owned by the migrants.
This is USA Radio News.
Oh yeah.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
It's an important conversation being had right now with Brad Griffin of Occidental Descent, OccidentalDescent.com.
How do we get this harnessed so that we, the discontent, the winner of our discontent, as Shakespeare said, can be translated into a political movement and actual boots on the ground, political power, actual representatives in Congress and senators in the Senate power.
All right, hold on before you answer that, Brad, because that's the key, is how do you take this discontented electorate and get them properly organized and led, which they have not been to this point, and that they are still are not. They are still not properly organized and led, but you have enough people there that you can win with if they would be. And I'm going to follow up on Keith's question in just a moment. But before you answer that, I want to go back and read from Occidental Descent. You've said it also perfectly there in the written form. We'll read it now to a radio audience, and then we'll have you respond. Brad writes, the more interesting story is the transformation of Donald Trump's base, which appears to have changed over the last year or so. I would have not assumed that 64% of Trump voters now say that their race is important to their identity, or that 87% are concerned about growing anti-white discrimination. This appears to be a sea change in racial attitudes in the Republican Party. Trump voters aren't growing hostile to non-whites, but they do feel under siege because the political correctness has been cranked up 100-fold over the course of the last 5 years. The only thing that is more unifying among them is their hatred of the mainstream media. Personally, Brad writes, I don't care what conservative elites or the Republican establishment thinks anymore. We're a long way out from 2024, and the ground is still shifting so radically on the right that all politicians may be forced to adjust to the new reality. Could there be more coming that will accelerate these trends and heighten the siege mentality even further amongst whites? Marjorie Taylor Greene spoke out as a white woman who was under attack by the media on the basis of her racial identity. Trump never did that. I didn't see that one coming, Brad writes. If Trump runs again in 2024, it'd be smart to dial up both the identitarianism and the economic populism. The old Reaganite policy agenda and taboos are dead in the water and no longer makes sense given the resorting of the electorate that we see taking place. This is a big reason why Trump won in 2016 and lost in 2020. He moved away from what was resonating instead of leaning into it. Brad, take it away. This is what's happening. This is where we are.
Yeah, right.
Very interesting what has happened.
How do we harness it?
Since the Biden inauguration. Well, go, Brad.
We said earlier, you know, we noticed that no one was really, you know, coming out and saying, looking at these same trends and saying it. But yes, actually someone did. I was watching the last Tucker Carlson, and Tucker was talking about, you know, all the anti-white crazy woke stuff, and, you know, how even, you know, even mathematics being called racist and how it's been out of control. And he had Heather McDonald on there in his last show. And Heather McDonald came on and she's like, now, she frames it this way. She said, now, this is going to be kind of controversial. This is like a real hot potato here, but white people are under attack. White people are under attack. And I'm like, like everyone agrees. like
the emperor has no clothes.
Right. Nine out of ten people in the room are thinking the same thing. It's important to make this distinction, because the same polls we're talking about show this. The same polls that show that, you know, white identity is way up show no hostility at all whatsoever to non-whites. Right. So it's a defensive thing. People, I mean, you see it. I mean, every time you open the New York Times or the Washington Post or turn on CNN, you're under attack. You're being called a white supremacist, a racist. You're accused of systemic racism. And people are just reacting to that. They feel like, you know, what is going on here? I'm under attack for being white. I haven't done anything. I'm just living my life.
I'll tell you where it all comes from. I'll tell you where this reluctance to talk about white interests comes from.
Yeah.
and this is my touchstone for whether somebody is an authentic conservative or a poseur. What is your
and
feeling?
Keith still uses the conservative adjective as a
positive. Yeah, well, I actually remember and lived through the civil rights movement, and I knew what was going on then, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not somebody that's just looked at it in a history book and tried to draw conclusions. I was there. Now, here's what I think happened. My touchstone for whether somebody is authentic as a conservative or a person on the right in American everyday politics now or not, all comes down to their position on the civil rights movement. If they take this position that the civil rights movement was grand and glorious and that sweet little old Rosa Parks just happened to be on the bus and, you know, she was just as pure as driven snow.
Sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah, and Martin Luther King was this great guy. And, of course, black people believe they just locked arms, started swaying back and forth, singing spirituals, and the walls came tumbling down. They give no credit whatsoever to Jewish power and influence. If you still have this nostalgic view that has been fostered by the news media and the academics and everyone else about the civil rights movement, you're a lost ball.
All right, that brings the question, Brad. You're talking about this resorting, this realignment. Yeah,
we have to have people that know what it that it was just as bad as every other left wing movement.
Will they ever realign to the point where they're talking that truth?
Well, like I said, one of the huge things is that, you know, it's just this one of the things that's definitely going to happen in the next 10 years is there's going to be a generational turnover. In that, like, Generation X voters are getting older, millennial voters are getting older, are going to be the majority, the overwhelming majority of the electorate. And people just don't remember. I mean, the memory of that is just fading just because there's fewer people like that. Now, what I'm looking forward to, James, is when you're going to launch your campaign for U.S. Senate. because you know, maybe it wasn't your time back around 2000.
I did get 20. Hey, listen, in 2002, I did get 20% in the House race.
Look, I got 40%.
Yeah, that's right. He got 40% for assessor. That's true. Newsweek covered that. But now 20%. Yeah, but I tell you, and listen, I'm never out of it. You know, we could do that. We could do that, Brad.
Well, somebody's got to step up. You know, to step up. You need to step up down there. And,
yeah, it's an open seat for U.S. Senate in Alabama coming up. Maybe I should.
That's Brad. You, Brad. It's got your name on it, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, that's yours for the taking, buddy.
I'm the guy who's been I'm the real populist. I've been defending white people for 20 years when no one else is willing to do it.
Well, you should. In all honesty, no kidding aside, you should win it. I mean, that would.
Anybody that's a friend of Vardaman is a friend of mine.
But what is? Go ahead, Brad.
I mean, my question is, and the same thing is kind of. I mean, you realize that there's just like no floor underneath the old way. There's no floor under Mitch McConnell's way of doing things. There's no floor under the way of Con Inc's way. They're trying to maintain this. How do you maintain the taboo when like 9 out of 10 people in the room agree that you're wrong and feel under attack? And I mean, is there any point in calling me and you a hate group when everyone like agrees now?
Yeah. What? Now almost 90% of the American Republicans agree with us.
But that's the thing, and I have said that, Brad. I have said that since the day I went on the air in 2004. I said most whites. I don't have any evidence to back this up. I don't have any scientific verifiable. But I feel it. I know these people. Yeah, I talk to these people. They fundamentally agree with us, and now it's being fleshed out.
Yeah, here's one of the key things, I think, one of the key things that's driving this. In that, like, if you go back 10, 20, 30 years ago, there used to be far more suburbanites, more professionals, more managerial types in the Republican Party. They were a much bigger swath. There was much evenly distributed. So you had two parties, both controlled by professionals, both controlled by well-to-do suburbanites, and what happened was is that their cultural views kind of like ruled the roost, right? There was always this growing concern down there that, you know, whites were under attack, but these people were, you know, still demographically and financially dominant in the Republican Party. Well, what, over the last 10 years, what you've seen is you turn on MSNBC, you see it. More and more of these people, these cosmopolitan, well-to-do suburbanites who what's central to their identities, what is central to their identity is repudiating their whiteness because they think it's low class. Well, those people are going over to the Democrats. And as more and more of them just go out the door and more working class people come in, it's really getting to the, especially the left becomes so extreme on this issue. I mean, it's about to burst out into the open. The way to do that, I think, is to, I mean, if there was ever a time to launch, you know, a primary campaign or, launch a campaign. I mean, like I said, I was joking around on my blog. Maybe it wasn't David Duke's year in like 1991 or two, way back then. But it's a different world. It's a different ballgame.
He got damn David was damn close. We were with him, of course, a couple of months ago. He very nearly sacked the Senate and the governorship, and of course was already in the House.
They probably had electoral fraud back then too. Was probably responsible.
Well, you know, I have broken bread with David. David's a great friend of mine, as close to family as you can get with not being blood related. He told me stories that would make you cringe about how they would go to these factory workers and tell them they would lose their jobs if they voted for Duke. These were natural Duke voters, but it is a different time now, and where it's going is very interesting. We'll be right back.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
know, this is such a fascinating conversation that we're having with Brad Griffin, the editor and founder of Occidental Descent, OccidentalDescent.com. This is a discussion of the findings of the mindset of Republican voters since the inauguration of Joe Biden, which was only a month ago today. It was a month ago today. It's only been a month.
And our future, too, now that we have Trump and Rush Limbaugh passing the baton, who's going to take the baton? And see, what we were talking about, for example, look at Wyoming. Wyoming basically has done the dirty work for the, you know, neocon establishment in Washington. They keep electing people like Liz Cheney and her father Dick to that congressional seat. And these people have nothing whatsoever to do with Wyoming. They didn't grow up in Wyoming. They don't have ancestral ties in Wyoming. But they continue to elect people that have nothing to do with their state. And that's got to stop. We've got to insist that we get real people from real states. Like, for example, Roy Moore was a real person from Alabama, but he didn't pass muster on the fastidious manners that George Will would like to impose upon all people. Okay, so consequently, you know, the fact is that he had a girlfriend who was 17 when he was 31 or something. Look, that was commonplace in the old South. I mean, look at Breakfast at Tiffany's. Look at Doc Golightly, who married Holly when she was going on 14. Okay,
all right.
That's what it was all about. You know, you had these May December things. They used to have a joke. What do they call a 16-year-old girl in Arkansas? And the answer was middle-aged.
Arkansas is the only southern state that can get bashed by the rest of the southern states. But all right. All right. Anyway, Brad, but the point is the GOP realignment, and you wrote about this as well, the cosmopolitan, the metropolitan liberals of the Republican Party are abandoning the GOP even as we speak, even over the course of the past month, and they are going over to the Democratic Party. So you have this sea change, and you have now rising in the GOP people like Ron DeSantis, people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. And as you wrote on your website, which we've been covering, in which you've had a fantastic series of articles over there at OccidentalDescent.com, what happens if the GOP finally collapses due to the loss of these suburban voters? 85% of Republicans were against convicting Trump. Only 12% of Republican voters supported it. So how long is Conservatism Incorporated going to be able to hang on, even given the reality of the fact that their demographic base in the wealthy suburbs is going over to Joe Biden? So you have this now, and that brings me to the most fundamental question I have for you tonight. The people are with us. The people are with us. The GOP is with us.
But the money's Trump, not with
well,
us.
Well, that's fine. Half the electorate is with us, but they're not properly organized. They're not properly led. Trump never said once what he would do for white voters. If you get a GOP candidate that will go in there and
say, Huey Long, just like Brad said, we need the new Huey Long.
If that happens, Brad, what happens to American politics? If you've got a guy that will rise up and harness this energy, harness this overwhelming
class popular
percentage
spirit
of voters of the Republican Party, if he harnesses it and if he identifies as pro-white, what happens here and how quickly can it happen?
This is my pet theory that, you know, like, okay, first of all, it's clear that there is a realignment going on in the electorate. Now, there's been, I think, six of these in the past. The America goes through party systems, and then everything collapses and breaks up, and then new parties and agendas and ideologies and coalitions emerge. It happens every so often. You know, you had Jefferson and Madison, and then that went on, and then you had the Whigs versus Jackson and the Democrats. Then you had the Republicans versus the Democrats in the post-Civil War era. Then you had
pre-Civil War era.
Yeah. Populists versus progressives from the 1890s down to the 1930s. And then in the 1930s, we had, you know, the New Deal coalition and then the reaction against it, which was conservatism. Well, that's breaking up. That way of doing things just makes no sense anymore. And it's antiquated and it's going away. And like, as all these suburbanites, the overall trend is the suburbanite professional people who are really driven by cosmopolitan values are going over to the Democrats. Well, more and more working class people are coming to Republicans. This is a very early to see, but like you're starting to see big movements amongst Hispanics in places like, even in places like California, toward the GOP, and blacks in inner cities too. A small shift, but it's detectable that people are more and more poor and working class people of all races are moving towards Republicans, and the wealthier to do people are moving away, are moving towards the Democrats. Now, where is this going? Like you said, if you look at the polls, and it's not just it's important to point out, it's not just white identity that's on the rise. It's also a different kind of politics we have seen in the last 50 years. It's support for, you know, I've written at length about the stimulus checks, and the white people are not just culturally stressed, they're financially stressed too. And so you're starting to see like a poll that came out of Georgia, something like 75% of voters support the $2,000 stimulus checks. I mean, in poll after poll after poll, you're starting to see a third to a half of Republicans supporting populist economic policies. That's a huge change. That's an equally huge change. And it seems to be kind of, as the free marketers leave the GOP, more populist on economic types, people are coming into the GOP and replacing them. That's the long-term trend, I think. And
well, see, those people, though, Brad, that the people that are leaving, they're all hat and no cattle. And they're also, the type of people that, they have more people in think tanks and Abrams right. tanks, you know, in their ranks. They don't have the numbers, but they've got the money.
Right.
Can we win it without the money?
Well, and as you ponder that question, Brad, I would also mention, as you wrote on your website, Marjorie Taylor Greene applied the vitriol she was the recipient of as a result of her being a white woman. And then we have here now Ron DeSantis, who, you know, Ron DeSantis is a mixed bag. I like him in some mm-hmm. ways. He's a maverick in some ways. He's also a guy that would put you in jail for opposing Israel. But I bought a Trump yard sign in 2016 when he was candidate Trump. I once bought a Trump yard sign. And as a result of that, I never donated beyond that. As a result of that, I am on the mailing list of every Republican candidate that's ever existed. And anyway, I got this email from Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis, friends, Joe Biden and his anti-science comrades are used to Republicans rolling over and letting the radical left walk all over them. But I'm not a normal Republican. I'll never back down from a fight. Now, Joe Biden is considering Florida like East Berlin and shutting down our border over coronavirus concerns while allowing illegals to pour across our southern border. If he'd only paid as much attention to the southern border, our country wouldn't be overrun by drugs, sex traffickers, and thugs. Joe Biden and his big tech lords, tech overlords, yada, yada, yada. All right, so he goes on.
Yeah.
All right, so this is the rhetoric now that's coming out of the governor of the fourth largest state of the union, Ron DeSantis, and you've got Marjorie Taylor Greene. How far away are we removed, Brad, do you think, from a Republican all-star like a DeSantis or a Greene?
A Republican Huey Long.
From going like, listen, I'm the pro-white guy. Stick with me, and I'll take you to the finish line. That's
you're seeing like Republican support for corporate America has just fallen like a rock over last year. I saw that poll late last night. I was like, really? Another poll that shows that support for big tech has collapsed amongst Republican independents. Republicans are becoming, or the Republican base, it's important to point out that all these changes you see going on, or that 70% of the Republican electorate, which is the new dominant wing, which is the new populist wing of the Republican Party, is dominant now. Con Inc. used to be dominant for 50 years. It's not the case anymore. It's the power shifting within the GOP to the Trump wing, and it's becoming more radicalized on economics and culture. Now, my theory is that what happened with Trump in 2016 is that, you know, the reason Trump the reason 2016 was so amazing is because these two huge new groups of voters came into the GOP. Previously, there were two groups there, which was the free marketers and the social conservatives. And then after Trump, there were four groups there. Well, that's because all these people got swept up with Trump and came in. Those people have taken over now. And my theory is that someone can be far more populist on economics than Trump ever was. and run and win over a whole new wave of disaffected voters who might come in 2024. And then like you might think of like Trump as, you know, a step in that direction, and whoever this is next, you know, might be more of a Huey Long type. Populist on both culture and economics instead of just culture.
Well, race has to be a part of it too, because see, that's the problem. The left has chosen race as our battlefield. We don't get to fight a battle in one field and they're in the other field. Mm-hmm. You've got to be able to identify the enemy, and if you can't identify the enemy, you have no chance of beating them. And because of that, the fact that the left is intentionally pitting non-whites against whites as much as they possibly can, that's their winning hand. That's because race is the most accessible issue. You can have a 50 IQ and be able to tell a white man from a black man. It's not like theoretically determining globalism versus nationalism.
Well, I'll tell you this. Our time with Brad Griffin has gone by far too quickly, but he is writing about these issues, and he will continue the discussion and conversation at OccidentalDissent.com. Brad, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Great news and something to be encouraged by.